Jerusalem. In 1948, I came not as a fresh person student, but as an equally uninformed teacher, ignorant of the folkways of Southern California and the city of San Diego and the teachers and colleges generally or specifically. After 50 years of continuous study in these subjects, many gaps still exist in my knowledge. A gathering such as this is truly educational. A great deal of what I have learned through the study of documents, of course, about the early years, been brought to light here by the reminiscences, observations of the people who spoke before me. We're all fortunate to be here on a Saturday. On a working weekday, there would never be room for us. Every morning, the central campus swarms with student persons. For probably more individuals are on this campus every day than were in the whole city of San Diego in 1898, when the first classes were held. In addition to the pedestrians walking in from their parked automobiles, some students ride bicycles wherever and however they wish. And lately, a few real daredevils have been rushing around on skateboards, weaving in and out like motorcyclists on the freeway. A few years ago, I recall the campus was similarly afflicted with uncontrolled stray dogs. Now the campus dogs are on leash, and it's time for a similar regulation that all skateboarders would be on leash, accompanied by guardians, human or canine. Curiously, at the same time that the campus is overcrowded and the neighborhood parking space is even less adequate, university administration is concerned over a shortage of students. FTE is a sad symbol which may cost the current budget $335,000. It's typical of the growth of the university that a mathematical abstraction like FTE may sometimes be more important than a human being. An individual might weigh 300 pounds and fill two stations. And yet, not be a full-time equivalent student in classroom unless he had signed up, he or she had signed up for 15 units of training. Just try to picture that if you can. Possibly there were FTE policies in 1928 or in 1898, but not so much was published about them. In one of the classes I taught here, first ones, in late afternoons for regular and extension students, President Harvey's secretary was an auditor and took down all the lectures in great shorthand. Georgia Amsden could have been a spy for the administration. For all that I knew, without inquiring whether they had enrolled or paid fees. Money was not so vitally important on the campus then, primarily because there wasn't enough of a good place over. At the founding, President Black was the highest paid man on the faculty, actually, with an initial salary of $3,500 annually, not monthly, but annually. 15 years later, President Hardy's monthly pay was $333.33, which added up to about $4,000 a year. Esoteric information like this is been preserved haphazardly in the archives. We have a complete salary scale from everybody from the president down to the janitor for some years, but for other years we have absolute blanks. Reunions like this are happy opportunities to meet old friends, as you know, and to revive memories. None of us knew the first building downtown, which was used for only 1 year. It was plain and sturdy, and now it's plain and dirty in a questionable location on the outskirts of the gas lamp quarter. The first permanent building at the head of El Cajon Boulevard was charming, even beautiful. Unfortunately, it was destroyed about 25 years ago, ruthlessly murdered, we think. Under present day conditions, it could not have been knocked down without protest, for it was the creation of celebrated architect Irvin Gill and his senior partner, and thus it was a part of the city's cultural heritage worth preservation as a museum in a small park. I remember a little about that building, hardly more than that the lobby was spacious and handsome, and that the stairway to the second floor creaked suspiciously. The photographs that have been preserved are a more reliable guide than memories. By 1928, the building lacked space and equipment for the increasing enrollment, which was about 900 and rapidly approaching a full 1,000. That building was so crowded that I never had an office in it. Discarded classroom table was provided with a yellow wood about 3 feet wide, 2 feet deep. It had a hole in one corner for an inkwell. You can tell what an antique that building was. And that was my equipment. A table and a chair were set down in the corner of the vice president's office. We had only one vice president in 1928. I don't know the latest count on vice presidents, but there were several a few years ago. The vice president's office was next to the president's office. Nothing could have been more fortunate for a novice than to have closest associates of Irving Alcott and Edward Hardy. And who could escape building an institution with such mean animals and bureaucrats as these? If these planned remarks, which I felt then and now, have any central theme, It must be that some things change and other things do not change. The changes are more visible, and some of them appear to be improvements. Problems are likely to be permanent, or at least recurrent. A kindly example of is the up and down fortunes of the Washington football team, which has some good seasons and others not so good. President Davis said he hoped to win tonight. The odds are 50-50 perhaps. Now, the solutions to a poor football team are the same. Whether at Ohio State, which has its troubles, or at San Diego State, which has the same kind of troubles, the solutions are the same. Either fire the coach, or promote him to dean, where he won't do so much harm, or hang him in effigy. One treatment is as effective as the other. Temporary. And the permanent problem is forgotten. In my own unglamorous field of literary studies, the perennial problem is what to do with, of course, the fresh person student who cannot write. What to do in English Composition 1 was a question in 1928, and I believe it still is. The solutions here are obvious. To fire or promote the instructors, to flunk out the students or to graduate them, or to change the number of the course. The urge to do something is satisfied without disturbing the happiness of those students who can't or won't learn. You mentioned Mr. Alcohol, who didn't care for the students left. If he said he could put them to sleep in 20 minutes. He was my idol, of course, and I always tried to excel him and in every way. And I always enjoyed students who went to sleep before the class began. Misconception about the development of San Diego State University, that you can help dispel, and that you have helped dispel today. Here, namely, that the quality of education has improved here over the years. I don't believe that the school has unquestionably widened greatly. A student's choice of studies is many times what it was, but the goal of excellence is a stock term that was popular a few years ago. The goal of excellence is the same goal as in the period of the Norman School, and it was more easily reached then, where there was one program, one set of classes, one identical goal for all students, to become teachers in the elementary school. No plan could be more efficient, and after 2 years, the graduates were fully equipped to venture out onto the educational battlefield. The early faculty was equally excellent. One young man deserted the Norman School and eventually became president of the University of California. Most of the others loyally remained here, where I met some of the survivors in 1928. If you knew them too, probably better than I did. And you mentioned the names of most of them. San Diego State University has been particularly fortunate in its presidents, beginning with Samuel Black through Dr. Grace Bogan, and we have every reason to expect Dr. Grace. We insiders know, though, that a college president is not as important on a campus as laymen imagine, where students and professors determine the tone of a school. Poor administration can be disastrous. Our greatest good fortune with our presidents is that they have continued the blind-hearted emphasis on general culture, broad interest, and responsible citizenship. Another lucky accident of our presidents is that there have been so few of them. Why, in 80 years, plus a few acting presidents of equal ability, and each at that time to grow into his position, this is a hint for Dr. Day, give him a chance to grow into his position. Hope you'll be here 25 years. By that time, you'll be fully grown. Growing into the position, one becomes entitled to the loyal support that we've always given our presidents. The Normal School program was nationally recognized as being excellent for a normal school. Off-campus events produced a change, however, in 1921. The city had grown, Southern California was changing, and altered State of California requirements for teaching credentials replaced normal schools with teachers' colleges. Years of study were increased to 4, including a college degree, as well as a license. Our school absorbed these curricular improvements calmly, but more exciting to the campus was a second change in 1921. Many of you were a part of it, of course. For economic reasons, a lower division community college was located on the campus. Extremely high-class students enrolled, preparing to transfer Since I was in Greece, enriched the campus life. And new professors like Charles Leonard, Leslie Brown, stimulated an interest in scholarship beyond whatever had existed previously. The council participants agreed, including your council today, that San Diego State Teachers College was a stimulating place to be during the roaring 20s. It wasn't very roaring right here in San Diego. In fact, it wasn't very hot either, but it was a stimulating place to be. You know more about that than I do. For by the time that I became accustomed to this little city, the old campus had been moved to its present location in the desert outskirts of sagebrush, rattlesnakes, and increasing collegiate sophistication. But this is quite another story. A few words, a few final words on the way of an advertisement, commercial announcement, maybe. If you get to our Love Library, Love Library is a beautiful name for a library. Most students use it still for reading and purpose. If you get to the Love Library, which has replaced the single room that passed for a library, place to shelve books in the old campus. You can follow the theme of this meeting through a display of mementos, a very nice display of mementos. President Black's bow-headed cane, or one of them, his large sword, with a photograph of him in his gorgeous large costume, his uniform. You'll find other photographs from 1900, down almost to the present. You will see the first tiny college catalog side by side with the recent very large one. Copies of student publications beginning with the first white and gold yearbook and other fascinating reminders. In the same room, which is number 363, you will also find a tape recorder into which you are invited to recite your reminiscences or observations and comments, if you will. Someday, the history of San Diego State University will be written for posterity to admire. Admire means the root meaning is to wonder at. That will be the history of our university. It will be greatly admired, I'm sure, in 100 years from now. But what do you know that should be included there? Student persons didn't have much authority on the campus in the early days, but they knew a lot more than they ever showed in their classes. And now is the time to go over to the Love Library and tell all that you know. Thank you.
He said, "You know, if you'd like to meet again, I'll be glad to help you." have a sneak in sometime? Maybe next year, the year afterwards? I guess that gives consent, and with his generous offer, we'll probably get together again. One of the most pleasant aspects of our school through the years, as Barry had mentioned, Ruth told us, about the songs and the singing. Those of us who left San Diego and went to other schools quickly discovered that we were missing something there, because they were not singing campuses as ours had been. We asked Alan and Allison to get together, alumni from Treble Clef, Men's League, and to lead us in some songs. And incidentally, the printer who printed this is not one of Dr. Adam Starr's students, because I assured you, Dr. Adam, when I handed this copy to him, Treble Clef, Treble was probably stepped. So we're going to have to T-R-E-D-E-L. Alan, are you here? Here she wants all the travel back that it needs to be. She got a record here? Okay, here she comes.
We're wanting you all to sing, so in your programs, you will find the words to the song. And we are including the Purple Mountains, which is on this piece of paper. And Purple Mountains was written by Grace Walker Allen, who is accompanying us today. And will all the Treble Clef members and Men's League Club and Men's Quartet please come onto the stage. And we're going you to sing with us. And we would like to dedicate Purple Mountains to Ms. Smith. We call her our dear teacher.
Thank you. so many of them. Thank you. Thank you for your time. Oh.
This is our program. The meeting is adjourned.